Professor and economist Pablo Guillén from the University of Sydney. Pablo, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you going?
I'm fine.
That's the way. Now, first up, have we got anything going for us in Sydney, or are we just doomed?
No, we are not doomed, right? So Sydney is a relatively low-density city.
Yeah.
We are at about between, 2,500, 3,000 inhabitants per square kilometre.
Oh, okay.
So cities like London or Tokyo, mm-hmm. Greater Tokyo, are on the 5,000.
Wow.
5,000. A place like Barcelona that was put as an example by the minister
mm-hmm.
is a lot denser. Is average maybe 20,000, but there are areas in Barcelona that are 40,000 inhabitants per square kilometer.
Wow.
That's only comparable to very dense cities in Asia.
Yep.
Places like Hong Kong, right? Hong Kong is a lot denser than Shanghai, which was the other example
mm-hmm.
that Rob Stokes used as a possible way to go for Sydney.
Yeah. Now, if subdivision of our housing is the best option, how would that actually work, and in which suburbs do you think?
Well, subdivision of plots is an interesting idea, mm-hmm. right? So
let's actually, if we can just take a back step, what exactly does it mean by subdivision of housing plots?
Well, what's that? The great Australian dream, right? So
yeah.
you have your house on your land, right?
Yep.
And the size of your land is a quarter of an acre,
yep.
right? So I have researched that. I come from Spain. We use the metric system. I
yep.
don't know quite what a quarter of an acre is. It is about 1,000 square meters,
yep.
right? So the minister talked about plots that are a bit smaller, 800 square meters.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is you can subdivide them. So allow people, you don't oblige them, but you say, okay, here you have this plot. You can subdivide them in four.
Wow.
So there is four 200 square meter plots, and then you allow to have a family house on each of them. So let's see, if you allow a one-to-one you allow one square meter,
mm-hmm.
built square meter, for one square meter of land, you can have a 200 square meter house, right? On a
right.
200 square meter plot.
Mm-hmm.
It can be at over two levels, right? You have 100 square meters on each level.
Yep.
And you have a fairly nice garden,
mm-hmm.
100 square meters garden,
yep.
right? So, and you can attach two of these houses, so you have semis.
Yeah,
right?
Basically, yeah.
And essentially, if you do that in every plot, you would multiply the population density by four, right? And that's a lot more people.
That is a lot more people living basically on top of each other too, really.
Well, not really.
No.
They wouldn't live on top of each other. They would live in family houses.
Yeah.
And you would have a party wall shared with another house.
Yeah.
But you would have a garden on the other side. So
right.
there could be
some
still
greenery.
Yeah. Space and sun access, so it wouldn't be as dense
yeah.
as places like Surry Hills or like Glebe, right?
All right, okay. Now, the planning minister, as you mentioned earlier, suggests we model ourselves on Barcelona. You're actually from Barcelona yourself. So do you see that city as a good example for Sydney to base its situation on?
Well, not at all, right? As I said before, Barcelona is very, very dense. Barcelona
yeah.
is about the densest city in Western Europe.
Oh, wow.
Together with Paris. And Barcelona is built on a grid, right?
So it's a planned city.
It's a, well, yes, it's somehow a planned city, right?
Yeah.
So there is the very old city, which is medieval, right?
Yeah.
There used to be some walls surrounding the city.
Mm-hmm.
They tore down the walls and they built some streets following.
Okay.
And you can see this easily. If you go now to Google Maps,
yeah.
right, you will see Barcelona. Outside there, it's a grid, right?
Yeah, right.
And the thing is, the master plan for Barcelona allowed to build only two sites on each block, right? But, the council said there is an opportunity to make money, So they sort of, twisted the plans and they allowed to build on four
All right.
On all four sides. So one of those blocks is about 10,000 square meters. They are 100 by 100, right? So in one, and what you see is apartment buildings all around. Each apartment building is the small ones, the old ones, are 6-story high. Average is probably 8-9 stories. And the really tall ones are 12 stories. That's not apartment towers. That's not 50 stories, right?
Yeah.
But there is one next to the other.
Yeah.
So if you do your calculations, you will see that in 10,000 square meters, you have maybe 200 dwellings. Imagine 200 families. So by comparison, 10,000 square meters is 10 times a quarter of an acre, right? In Australia, you have 10 families compared to 200 in Barcelona. So to achieve this, so there is nothing about middle density in Barcelona, okay? What Robert Stokes is talking about is something more closer to what you can see in places like London or like Greater Tokyo or Osaka.
Now, Australia a huge country. We've got a lot of little regional centres. Is this an opportunity for us to promote growth in those regional centres, places like Newcastle, Wollongong, even sort of as far as west as sort of Orange, places like that? Is that an idea that could take hold?
Well, that's a possibility. I'm not 100% sure. There is a role to play, so there will be population going to those places, but I don't think that they will be able to absorb all the population that actually want to come to Sydney or to Melbourne.
Right.
And why is that? Well, because, you know, Sydney and Melbourne are global cities, especially Sydney, right? And people want to live here because here is where there are the economic opportunities, right? Cities are essentially money-making machines, right? So, and see, there are urban economists working on those things, and they have found out that having people close to each other, people who are driving the economy, people working on IT, you know, and all this fancy technological stuff, they become much more productive when they are close to each other, right?
Yeah.
Why? Because they can... People from different firms, they can hang around for lunch, you know.
Yep.
And also the environment is nicer. You know, you have nice cafes and restaurants and so on. So they are happier workers and they can communicate, right?
Yeah.
You have a productive environment. Yes, there is a very important social aspect to creativity because we are talking about creative jobs, right?
Yeah.
It's not being in an assembly line.
Yeah.
It's not being an accountant crunching numbers.
Yep.
We are talking about people who are paid for thinking, right?
Absolutely. That's apparently what happens here. Now, our public transport is struggling even with the current population, let alone adding a couple more million into it. What cities' public transport systems do you think have it right, and who do you think we need to aspire towards?
Well, I think we need to look at Japan, right?
Okay.
There are examples also in continental Europe that would be interesting for us, places like Berlin, places like London or Vienna, that are not as dense as Barcelona, and they have decent public transportation. However, Japan's urban public transport is fascinating. You get a model share in the big cities, in Greater Tokyo, Nagoya, in the Kansai area, which is around Osaka, of 70%, right? So 70% of all travel is done by public transport, essentially by rail, right?
Yep.
Especially in Tokyo. So, and that's in cities that are not as dense as people imagine, right? So we have this idea of Tokyo, you know, skyscrapers, you know, lost in translation. There is a guy in a lonely hotel, right? So, but what happens when you land, you travel to Tokyo, you land at Narita Airport, right? And you take a train to the city.
Yeah.
And that's like 50K from the city. And then you go through the suburbs, right?
Mm-hmm.
and the suburbs, how do the suburbs of Tokyo look like? They look very much like the suburbs of Sydney, right? So it's detached houses, right? Yep. It's little, not big houses, but they are detached houses, right? So nonetheless, they manage for people to not be car dependent.
Yeah.
Right? So, and there are several ways that they manage to do that. So the railway station is the center of each of these suburbs or of each of these villages. And what you see around railway stations, you see shops, right? And you see schools. So it means that people can walk to do their shopping locally. People can walk or ride a bicycle to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the train, you know, if they want to go to the fancy shop in the next suburb, right, they can take the train. Or for even fancier shopping, they can go to...
Into town,
right?
Yeah.
And they basically can go anywhere using the public transport. There is also, you know, a very heavy commute, especially in the morning.
Yes.
Right? Everyone wants to be in the train. So you see the little kids going to some schools, right, using the trains. And you see these images, you know, of people pushing people in the trains, right?
But if you
go out of the rush hour, it's actually quite comfortable. And the trains are still, there is still a lot of people in the trains, but it's comfortable, right? So the thing we have in Sydney is a suburban railway that it actually works very well. Right?
Yep.
People complain a lot about public transport.
They do,
Sydney.
Don't they?
Yes.
I use it a fair bit, and I've never really had a problem.
Yeah.
A lot of people sort of whinging about this or that, but
there is quite a bit of whinging going on. So
Australians love a whinge.
Yeah, I know. So the thing is how the public transport, how the trains are designed in Sydney. The trains in Sydney are designed to bring people to the city.
Mm.
And they are very good at that, right? So in the CBD, how many people we have working? Maybe about 300,000 people, maybe something between 250,000 to 300,000 people.
Right.
The vast majority of these people use public transport to get to the city. Why? Because there is no nearly enough parking for them. You know, imagine if the trains all of a sudden stop working and you say, just use the motorways, get a car, come to the city. They would need to build 300,000 car spots. That's crazy. That's impossible. It's unfeasible, right? So a city, the city of Sydney couldn't work without public transport, right? The thing is, the way to work is you have one seat, right? So you wait for your train in town hall, you know, and go to Richmond or Penrith or whatever, right? And basically you sit down and you stay in your seat.
Mm-hmm.
The way things work in Tokyo are a bit different. So the public transport works more as a network. So you are supposed to change trains somewhere, right?
Oh, okay.
And if we change here, so rather than, you know, having trains going to multiple destinations from the same platform in town hall, to going to one platform, one destination, and then you change trains somewhere, then the system will work more as a network and a lot more people would be able to use trains, right?
Very, very interesting stuff. That is, something I hadn't considered.
You need to add to that.
Yeah.
It's not possible to build all the rail lines, the density that it is in Tokyo in a short term, right? So you would need to consider to use buses, especially the further west and the further north and the further south you go from the CBD, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you need to consider to reserve the existing road space for buses.
Yeah.
Basically, you have buses running on their own part of the road, right? And then basically the train lines go from the center, from the CBD, like spokes. It's a hub and spoke network. Mm-hmm. You can have an orbital bus system,
on the outside,
right?
Of that.
You are going to have less patronage, less need. But, you know, with buses you can cater for maybe 3,000 passengers per hour up to that, with a bus every 2 or 3 minutes.
Yep.
And, you know, you don't have to, you get to your train station, you don't need to wait much for your bus, and the bus goes regularly because it has its own path.
Yep.
And when population density increases, because we are subdividing the plots, yep, and then people are using, want to use more the buses, because actually driving is a pain, because, you know, road space is taken by the buses, then you convert this to light rail, right? Yeah. And with light rail, you can move up to 12,000 people, so it's 3 times more.
Yeah.
And light rail is nicer, then people will want to really love go to live there. Right?
I've got the light rail is actually being extended past my place at the moment. Well, over the next sort of years or so, I cannot wait for it to be ready. I will use it every day, I reckon.
What happens with trams is people like them very much because they are comfortable. Mm. When we were talking out, I told you about how my life in Barcelona. Mm. I used to live in the city, yep, and I commuted to the university that is in the suburbs, right? And I had the best time of the day in the train because I could snooze a little bit. I was working hard for my PhD, so, you know, having a little nap was very nice. And, you know, trains have this calming effect, you know, that buses don't.
Mm.
So, you know, we can do something with buses. Probably we are going to need to do a lot with buses in the outer suburbs.
Yep.
But once patronage increases, those should be converted to
either... To light rail.
Yes, to light rail. Also, some... new metro lines are coming up. There is a revolution in transportation in the city, right? So there is a metro line coming, there is a light rail.
Yep.
And if you see it at other places, so there is nothing like that going on in the United States of America, for instance, right? There is no heavy rail line under construction in the States, and nothing has been built in the last 20 years. So the only thing they built was a little extension of a metro line in Los Angeles, and now in New York they are doing the Second Avenue subway. But this is very, very, this is tiny in comparison with what is happening here and in Melbourne.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's bloody interesting. I could talk about it.